edition of the Off Track Racing Show presented by BikeMag.com. We're coming at you guys from Whistler, BC. Words really can't describe the vibe right now we have in the Whistler Village. Crankworx and the Enduro World Series have partnered up. It's going to be a very exciting week ahead here. And it's not your normal race show here at Off Track. We are doing a super duper mega roundtable edition show. And we've got some pretty surprising guests all in the one room here. So it's kind of like almost like a bit of a dating game. We've got Rider 1, Rider 2, Rider 3, Rider 4, and then our other guests. But joining me today is my co-host, is Seb Kemp, joining me in studio. Seb, how are you doing today?
Not bad, Tristan. How you doing?
Yeah, not bad. So you're out on course today, doing a little wander through, making sure all the lines are taped up?
Yeah, getting punched seriously riding the trail. I think it's going to be interesting come Sunday, eh?
Very, very interesting. So let's go in rider number one here. She's the better half of one of our regular contributors. She rides for Santa Cruz Bikes. We've got Anca Martin. Anca, thanks for joining us.
No worries. It's good to be here. It's good to come out here and have a chat with you and not do it all online. And it's good to hang around out here and get chatting.
How's Whistler been so far for you?
Oh, it's been amazing. We've decided to come out a few days early and just come out and ride some trails and have fun with friends and go on some adventures. And we went out to the Chilcotins and did an amazing float plane trip out there, which was a magical day. And that to me is what this is all about, having some time to spend quality time with friends and explore the area, and then you can get back to racing.
Yeah, that's what we're all here for, I guess, at the end of the day. It's so cool that you guys are, I mean, everybody at the table's been to the Chilcotins now here, so... Very, very rad times that you guys are all don't live here, but you guys have made a point of checking it out while you're here. So, very cool. And then, so we've got rider number two. He's one of the most articulate racers in the pits, multi-time DH World Champion. We've got Fabian Brel riding for Canyon Bikes. Fabian, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Really happy to be here. Always good to have a round table and chat with everyone, especially about our passion and the new racing that is coming up. So, no, it's fantastic to be here.
Right on, Ryan. So you've been in Whistler before for downhill.
Yep.
Have you explored the valley before, or is this your first kind of time?
Well, I'm really joining Anca on what she said. It's like I came here for racing. I saw Crankworx, I saw the bike park and everything, and I think moving more in this enduro scene for me is showing me a very different side of mountain biking. I grew through all mountain even before downhill, and I think the overall atmosphere that we got around enduro is also the part of traveling, adventure, and spending sometimes with the friends. And as you said, everyone went to the Chilcotins and really enjoy all the trips around. And I actually rode more the trails around the bike park than the bike park this year. So yeah, it's a different face of Whistler for me this year.
It's very, very cool that you guys are just how enduro is working. I mean, you see with the Downhill World Cup, you fly in on a Wednesday, you track walk on a Thursday, you practice qualify on a Friday.
Yep.
You race on a Sunday, very, very kind of in and out, and
it is a huge difference for us. Like we used to come to places and actually don't have time to really see the trails around and really feel also the mountain bike community that you could have in each area.
Yeah.
And I think enduro is very different because a lot of people also get involved into the general organization, and it's not so private. You got like all the time the association of the area that are really pushing the event, and I think having the possibility to meet all those persons is definitely something that is a lot more interesting for me.
Yeah, cool, cool. And then of course, rider number three, he's not really, well, he's a bike rider, but he's not one of the racers right now. We've got the man that is Chris Ball joining us here, the Enduro World Series director, creator, the almighty.
Yes! Wow.
Take that one.
Yeah, it's a way to introduce yourself.
You have gobbled up all these smaller events and put them on.
No, that's it.
You should speak. It just sounds like thunder coming out of your mouth.
To be honest, I'm pretty disappointed there's no statue here. Yeah, thanks very much for having me. Listened to a good few of these over the last few months. It's amazing to see the following that the Enduro World Series has developed, like the traction and the momentum. So it's great to sit around the table and actually, talk about it rather than just listen to it and kind of, follow it. So I'm so absorbed, in the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, very, very cool.
Great to be here.
Well, it's awesome to have you joining us. And then our next guest, he's the current points leader of the Enduro World Series. We've got Jerome Clemence. Jerome, thank you.
Hi. Not almighty, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
no. Napoleon, mate. Yeah.
He was a little late. He was down by the pool working on his tan this afternoon.
Yeah, like, there is so many things to do here. So, I've been busy swimming in the lake, jumping from the rope, having an ice cream.
Going to the beach.
I took some pictures. We can post it later.
We'll have to put that up on the off-track side there. So, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And then, of course, we actually have a bit of a special guest. We didn't really, I didn't know she was showing up until she rolled up here, but couldn't be more happy for her to join us. She's the other points leader. We've got Tracy Mosley.
Thank you. Hello. Yeah, sorry, it's a bit of a last minute addition, but yeah, happy to be here, and it's amazing to be back in Whistler, not being here for 5 years, and to be back and not have a downhill bike with me is kind of a rare thing. But actually, as Fabian said earlier, it's allowed me to explore Whistler maybe for kind of more of what is an offer, really, rather than just the bike park. And yeah, my two laps at the bike park at the weekend were pretty horrible, actually. I have to say, I've been avoiding it with a passion of going anywhere else possible. So, yes, yeah, I wish I could stay longer.
Out of all the roads you've done, what's your favourite been so far? In Whistler, because I know you're probably going to say Chilcotins, because that was magical.
The Kashmir and Kush.
Awesome.
Just awesome. Proper loamy, not yet destroyed by too many bikers. So,
well, I'm sure the internet will get hold of it like Ride Don't Slide did years ago.
Well, that was the thing.
The Creeperks train will mow it down.
It's on the map now.
Yeah.
Well, it is now. Tracy Mosley talked about it on the Off Track podcast.
Very much. So, I mean, it's cool. So, I mean, I guess, show of hands around the table, who had ridden XC in town beforehand when you've come here? So, outside of Lost Lake.
For those listening at home, there's not many hands up right now.
Yeah. So the room has gone silent. Like, who wants to come to the chalkboard and fill out the math equation? Everybody's gotten quiet. So,
well, I've only ever had a hardtail, like as like a warm up bike. You know, yeah. You stick on the turbo. So I've had like a little 100mm fork and a hardtail cross country bike, which is not really your ideal bike for Whistlers. Even the little mellow green trail is pretty technical. So I've bounced around on that a few times, but never really been able to.
I gotta see on my side that when we've been in I've been in Whistler in like in 2007 the last time, so it's quite a long time ago, and I rode I think probably one of the first ever year that Ride on Slide was just shaped, and that was for me one of the best rides I remember of my life. It was I think you were with me that
and it
year.
It was amazing.
And it was amazing trail. So it's all beaten down now, but just having the chance to ride the other trails around, I think that. Bike park is definitely only one face of Whistler, and the rest around is absolutely magical.
There is a lot of like all mountain trail that you need to pedal up, like no lift to access, and after you have like really fresh and natural downhill that the local build, and it's amazing how many of them there is around, and every time you come you need to have a guide or a local to show you like new stuff.
And the work they do on the trails just around here is just rad, because I mean normally you would expect the trail where they don't make money out of because there is no lift, that there is not so much maintenance, but I think the association that there is around the club, they must invest a lot of time themselves to keep those trails in the way they are.
And I've been blown away by just how many there are. You know, it's not just one or two trails. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think the first day I turned up Thursday night, we rode with Richie, I think you were with us Friday morning, and we were riding a handful of stuff, and every time we'd like ride 10 meters, we'd be another trail darting off, and they were all incredible.
And they all have a story. Like yesterday, we were riding with Seb, and we met a trail builder, and like talking about the name and stuff about the trail, and like all the trail, they have their own name with a story behind, and for the trail builder, it was really important, like to have a proper good name with a signification, and it's good to see all this creativity here and all the life around mountain biking, just about not only riding, but also building, sharing, and this is where it comes close to enduro. No, it's.
And I have one question. I mean, you guys are part of the scene here, and you may be able to answer me on that, but in terms of vocabulary, what is the name of the type of riding you guys are doing here? How do you call it when you go off the bike box?
Do you know what? I think it would have been called XC, like cross country, until just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then people would start to maybe say it's XC and kind of exaggerate, not really trail riding. And all mountain never kicked in. Of course, everyone calls it enduro now.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But yeah, no, it's very true because there's a big split.
That's a debate that we had many times over the last few months. And in terms of marketing with the brand, in terms of the positioning of the World Enduro Races, Enduro Series, and just to try to make the difference for people to understand what is the discipline, what is the sport, what is the racing. And I think, on my side, what I always try to push for with the brand when we position marketingly product and stuff, we always push for all mountain in terms of word, and enduro is more the racing side of the thing. So yeah, just wondering what you guys in the community are using.
I think it would be called cross country. It was certainly called cross country for a long time, but I think everyone's known that that's been a difficult phrase because it has so many other connotations attached to it.
Yeah.
But if you come along to a Thursday night toonie race, which is our local cross country races, which happen every Thursday throughout the whole summer. Mm-hmm. We call them cross-country races, and there'll be a lot of people on quite solid cross-country bikes with a bit of a trail angle, and you wouldn't believe they ride all the trails that we've been riding, but on maybe 100-mil bikes.
Oh, Maddie Ryan is that perfect example. He'll show up in Lycra in his 21-pound carbon.
And his triple chain ring.
Yeah. Yeah, triple chain ring, and it's...
Maddie Ryan, the
it's
90s
like,
have called. They
like,
want their drivetrain bike.
You know? Yeah.
those guys are riding up for timing, right?
Yeah, that's where they put all the time on everything.
Because every time, I mean, I've seen guys in the last 10 days riding, they're really cruising up, chatting up, and they enjoy the way down. That's pretty much what they do, no?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say some of the best trails in Whistler for descending, you have to pedal to. So it's such a cool, such a cool, relaxed vibe that we have here, I think. We do have the serious toonie races where people are... very aggressive about it, but then the rest of the time everybody, it's just, you know, a casual ride and a good little climb and everybody's just hanging out.
But I think, I mean, at the end of the day, having a proper enduro race, because apparently that wasn't the case the other years for the Whistler community, mountain bike community, is something great because it shows basically the real face of mountain biking here. And I mean, all the event that's been around Crockwell so far was mainly targeted around the bike park, when this event is actually showing everything that's happening in Whistler, so.
Well, we just met with Julian Hine, who's one of the main players behind Cro-Mag. He works for them, a local guy, been here for a long time, very embedded in the community. We just bumped into him, and he just done the top of the world lap down on his hardtail.
Oh, I saw him earlier.
That's what they
build.
That's what they ride. That's all they do. The hardcore riders. And he said, "Man, I'm so happy, man!" Like, he's been an XC racer for years, road cyclist. Like semi-professional, maybe even professional.
He was very, very professional.
And
for
he
a
said,
while.
"I'm so glad we have an enduro race here because it suits the kind of riding that he generally does." Every Friday, Cro-Mag boys have a Friday ride, and they close work every Friday and they go for a huge ride. And it'll be an
rain,
enduro,
shine, snow.
It'll be what you could call an enduro race.
I think
race.
As well though, you're saying like it's been called cross country up until recently, but if you've grown up riding the trails here on your cross-country bike, your level of technical riding is way above probably most people that would never get to ride such technical trails. So it's amazing what you can ride if that's what you're used to riding. You know, even if it is on a hardtail, that's the normal for around here. And even the easy trails are technical. If you put them anywhere else in the world, people would... they would freak, you know, come here and ride.
you wouldn't send a beginner. You see all the little kids' groups and they're all heading down all the technical trails and they're kind of like, excuse me, and they're like 5 years old and you're like, okay, you go.
The level of riding here, the level of trails is going to create good riders. So I can imagine that I could see locals absolutely hammering on 100mm hardtail bikes, being pretty impressive.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, that's a question that we can have, and that can be another subject, but we can, like when we all started on rigid bikes.
Exactly.
Now with new technology, you got a 5-year-old kid that's already on a full suspension.
Yeah.
And you wonder that in terms of skills, if it's not something that is needed. You know, like I remember myself riding in 97, paid down the track because my DH bike didn't arrive with a hardtail front and rear. And believe me, that makes you develop some skills because it's like fully rocks and technical and yeah, for sure that people are making the effort to actually learn about we call that proprioception in French, where you can actually really get the feelings on your feet. On the hotel, you develop things that you don't have in a full suspension.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah.
If you look at Loic Bruni, for example, like his dad was racing Mega Avalanche for years, and like Loic was coming to the race, and he was always with an hardtail.
Yeah.
Like he asked for a full suspension, but his dad said no until you are 14.
Yeah,
you stay and you learn
15,
on this, and
on
you see how he's
He's riding now.
Fast now. It was full suspension.
And he was doing something in France that we have, and I'm not sure it's in the other country. We call that the TNGV,
National
for Kids. And they have to do all disciplines with one bike. So they do trail, they do cross country, downhill, and the last one is
orientation.
Orientation. Oh, yeah.
So they know how to read a map
and
stuff.
Oh, so up to 15, they can't race downhill. They can do cross country, but they have those national title for all disciplines. So they ride everything with the hardtail. So they know how to do downhill, they know how to do trail, they know how to do a cross country, everything with the hardtail.
So this is why the French have developed such a good depth of field of all-round riders.
It definitely could be.
Yeah, pretty sure it have. And if you look, like all the people that, like all the French rider that are on the top of the sport in France, now they come from this school, like Rémy Thirion, Julie Bresset.
All the new ones are coming. Sabrina Jolie.
Yeah, Pauline.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Emeline Rago.
Isabou, yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
And do we know any other countries that instigate a similar kind of program young on?
The Germans started, and the Belgium, like close to France, they take part of this event every year too.
But I mean, one thing is sure is that we can't say that the French Federation is the one that is pushing the sport the most, because some of the time they take a decision that are not really in the right direction for the sport. But one thing is sure is that we always got a good structure through the French Federation that is going for the teams, for the national teams, and for the development of discipline. So you basically have a real link between the regional level, the local level, up to the national level. And I think this link is really what helping the growth and having like a motivation for the kid to always try to reach a higher level, and up to this selection to go to the European and then the World Championship. And I think all that linked together is actually the synergy that has been built between the French Federation and the UCI has been something that's been supporting the development. So it's not really definitely what it's happening in enduro, because we are on a completely, and we can maybe get into the subject now, but in a completely different development. But that's something that definitely for France, I think, has been useful to grow top athletes. Yeah.
The French Federation is more focused on mountain bikes than almost any other federation in the world. They've done an incredible job. Even if you look at the trail marking and the embracing of mountain biking in its entirety in France.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even you look at British Cycling, which is probably one of the new giants in cycling federations. They're still quite far behind in terms of the mountain bike programs.
Yeah.
Tracy's nodding her head over there for you guys at home. but I'm always amazed by the French. So the Federation, they're just fantastic. Yeah, so I would agree with you there. 100%.
Because it's always easy. I mean, we can chat for on and on that, but people are critiquing UCI, critiquing, if we go in France, everyone's critiquing the Federation, but it's always easy to see the bad side of the things. I mean, people are never focusing on what is actually good, and I think generally the investment that's been done has been something that has been well structured, and as Chris said, I mean, there isn't many countries where we get this opportunity.
You know, look at what you guys have had at world champs from the entire time I've been racing. Same person that has headed up that kind of looking after the national team, French team that gets to Worlds, you know, having Manu on the side of the track watching, looking at lines, feeding back to the riders, just that whole kind of almost family that's created and that belonging. Everyone knows who to go to, and the advice that they're getting given is incredible. To have that continuity for what's been nearly 20 years,
20 years, yeah,
is, you know, is amazing. It's just a good system.
Yeah.
It really is.
Can I ask, so Chris Ball, right? Is there an option for the Enduro World Series to kind of help nurture these young riders as well? We were talking about all-round riders, and that to me speaks very strongly to an Enduro athlete. Have you got eyes on the young children?
Strange question.
Yes.
You can't see it.
I think we're in absolute infancy, and I think we are very much at the start of quite a long journey, I would say. Yes, I think that's really important. Absolutely, looking after and educating the young riders, and I think a lot of that will come down to your spirit of enduro, topic you mentioned earlier, you know, actually just instilling the right morals from the start. But we need to first define enduro. There's still so much talk. You know, some riders today were saying, this is an enduro, and other guys are saying, this is the best enduro in the world. So, like, we can't yet look after or nurture the youth when we don't quite have a handle on where we're going just yet ourselves. So that's a very long-term view, but in short, yes, that's my answer.
But that kind of does exist already in Italy and France. We start to have, like, if you really look at the growth of the sport, we have like the regional races, then the national enduro races, and then now the new Enduro World Series. Mm-hmm. So you basically start to have the real level, and what Chris is organizing now with all his business partner is basically the end of a process that's been growing through Italy and France. And there isn't the young school possibility that we had in the other disciplines so far, because that's been installed by the federation and at the moment, and hopefully still like that, the enduro is something that is private. But we like, you go in France, you can ride regional races where you got 400 riders at the start, then you go to an enduro, a national enduro series, where you got same thing, 500 riders at the start, and then if you reach the level and you're good, you can go to the Enduro World Series. So you start to have this link for people to actually target themselves and be able to have a real possibility to evaluate.
Yeah.
And yeah, go ahead.
When we start like racing, we choose like downhill or cross country until like enduro becomes bigger and like more races. But now the kids, when they are 14, they say, I want to race enduro, and they do enduro, not cross country or downhill. They go to enduro directly. So, like, for the young, they're gonna like race earlier than we started, and like they're gonna build like more skill and experience.
And they're gonna see now that there's rock and roll stars like yourself.
Yeah, of course.
Big bowlers with the limos, and they can follow in your footsteps.
Limo, yeah, of course.
You really believe that kids that are 14 are in the situation to dream about enduro?
Yeah, I mean, we organize like local races,
yeah.
And we see more and more kids at 14, they come and they just like want to race. Like, I got tons of email when I organize a race, like kids are, oh, sorry, I missed the registration. Can I like apply again and say, yeah, there was a waiting list, and I tried to make them enter. But like, we see more and more, like before it was more like people between 30, 40 that were coming to enduro races. And now that we have more and more like young riders.
But that's still a sport ball, no? Right.
Yeah, and I think it's never gonna appeal to maybe to the younger market as much as downhill is gonna, because you definitely, from my experience anyway, when you're young you wanna just have almost instant fun, and getting lift to the top and riding down flat out is
you know,
it's an instant way of getting the best part of your day of your riding. Whereas you have to, I think, with age and with time and experience, actually want to suffer a little bit, and you have to want to be able to put the effort in and climb to almost get that reward and get more from your riding. And I think that only comes with a little bit more maturity and age. And I think there's always going to be, a juror is going to appeal to the slightly more middle-aged or older generation, I think, forever, just because you have to build that endurance as well. Your fitness, you know, your endurance comes when you're a little bit older. So to have, you know, 14, 15-year-old kids, it'd be awesome, you know, to start that young, because their endurance is going to, you know, grow early. But I still think that ability to, the want to put in that effort to get to the top of the hills comes when you're a little bit older.
I wonder, Jerome, like, if you're seeing younger kids interested in enduro, is that because of your region where you're from? Is there a strong downhill scene? Is there a strong jumping? Or is it because there isn't those things?
Yeah, that's true.
We don't have too many downhill races where I live. And also, like, I think it's not only about the racing aspect, but like when I left downhill or cross country, it's because I wanted to ride more and like see more trails. And it's not about like racing, it was more about like when you travel to a race, you can actually see more things, not wait all the weekend. And like with enduro, you can have all of this. Like, we all said that coming in Whistler before, we were just riding the park, and now there is enduro, you ride all day, you go around, you see more stuff. So I think there is some kids, not all of them for sure, that they want to discover more, they want to travel and like spend time on the bike, not wait. Like at the races, when you do downhill, Tracy and Fabian, you can, you know that you do two runs, then you rest for a day, then one race run on Sunday. When you do enduro, like at the end of the weekend, you don't want to touch your bike. You want to do something else.
Well, I think for the first time in a long time, the enduro has role models too. You know, younger kids have, you know, the Tracys and the Fabians and the Jeromes to look up to, which, you know, it didn't really exist before.
Not now, many of them are looking up to Jerome.
Even if they are eight.
Eye level.
But do you see that as something that's happened because of recent developments in enduro? It's become a very popular trend in mountain biking, and that's a good thing that we're starting to see these personalities, characters, role models emerge.
That's very interesting. That's a very important subject. In fact, just to what Jerome is saying, I think the development depends of the landscape you have. That's for sure that in places where enduro is easier to ride and there is no downhill, you will have kids getting there and getting involved into the sport. But there is also the cost of the material. An enduro bike can be a lot cheaper than a DH bike, and you use obviously less tires, less parts, etc. So that's one thing. And the others, I mean, you talk about rock and roll and stars, and we talk about image and roles that we all got in there. And I think it's kind of a key moment for the sport, because we were talking about rock stars, joking about all that, but no. I think the image of the sport is being decided just right now. And we had this discussion a long time in racing in DH on my side, where we were talking about skin suit, where we were talking about visors and stuff like that. And are we a cool sport? Are we fashion, or are we racing and high tech? Or the direction of the sport took the fashion side of things to go through motocross that worked really well, etc. And in enduro today, you don't want to be a mini DH image. You want to create your own image. And I think the role that we all got today is to kind of set this up. You don't want to be cross-country. You don't want to be DH, but you want to be enduro. And what is the real image of enduro? What's the real appearance that we should give? That's all those messages that we're going to give to the kids. And that's what's going to bring kids or not, and people or not involved into the discipline.
But that goes beyond, I think in enduro, I think we have a discipline that goes beyond image, like in downhill you talked about, and that leads us direct, I'm going to segue straight onto your point of the spirit of enduro, because I think you're right, we're a bit of a changing point in the sport where we have a discipline now with enduro that we can instill morals and trust and mature racing, and we've talked about adventure and experience and everything else, and that's, I think, been lacking a lot from cross country and down the Olympic pathway there, and downhill with the,
that's
you know,
why
the
it's
narrowing of performance. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I think we all have a huge responsibility, you four as riders, I think you two as journalists, and myself as kind of one of the organisers to instill that. Reprobates. You two drunks. And me as an organiser. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to go into this whole spirit of enduro thing, but I think that, yeah, you've mentioned every point about downhill and cross country there, and everything was image driven. And enduro is, in my opinion, and why I kind of feel so strongly about it and have done for years. It's about more than that, without sounding too much of a cliche. I wish you'd stop ignoring me, because it's sending me to despair. Without sound, yeah, you're calling me, and I don't think it's very fair that your shoulders are frozen. Oh, but you're an explosion. Your name isn't real, but I don't care for sound. The lights in the fuse might result in a bang, 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 oh. Before we move on, there's probably people still wondering, like, exactly what enduro is. Is there a way of encapsulating exactly what enduro is?
It's what people ride every day.
Mm.
Basically, like,
I ride a unicycle.
So this is enduro.
You ride a scooter every day.
That's
a
Vespa.
No peak on your helmet.
But I mean, if you don't like, you look at the people that ride your bikes, you go in your trail, you just wait and you look at the people that just ride. You see that they have a full suspension bike, most of them. They wear knee pads when they go downhill. They go up to find a nice trail to go down. They don't care about going fast uphill or not. They don't care about the time in downhill, they just care about being faster than their friends. And this is what enduro is at the end. Like, when you look at all of us, we go at the race with friends, not a lot goes along. You chat with them in the uphill, like, how was the stage before, how did you sleep, what did you eat, and some other stuff, but like, we cannot say on the radio. Then on the downhill, you race as fast as you can, try to have fun, and after you keep on talking with your friends and like making fun of them if you beat them. So it's just recreating what people do every day.
But that, everyone, you said it earlier, Seb, people go, or now, and it seems to have been the last 6 months, people are going on enduro rides, but, but enduro is
terrible.
The enduro, yeah.
Isn't
enduro,
that just what people say on Twitter?
it's going beyond Twitter now, I think. Enduro is just the competitive format that captures what we all do on a mountain bike. That's it. It's enduro is competition. Mountain biking is what we all love to do. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, for me, I think in the day, it's just mountain bike riding in whatever way you want to see that. You know, I think downhill obviously is racing. Downhill, cross country is an endurance but a speed kind of multiple lap event. So those are your two ends of the spectrum, and everything else in between that for me is mountain bike riding. And it's, you know, you might prefer going uphill more than you want to pot it down the downhills, or you might want the opposite. You might want to cruise up the uphills and, you know, go fast down the downhills. But it is just about mountain biking and the culture of enjoying being off-road on your bike, out in nature, exploring trails, and generally doing it in a social format with friends. It's not rocket science, it really is mountain biking, what we've all been doing for probably the last 20 years, but we've now got a discipline that basically recognises that as a race format, which I think for a lot of people, it falls into the area that they really, really are enjoying, because the, you know, the two ends of the cross country downhill, the kind of really specialised, serious ends of the spectrum where you need to train very specifically for those two sides, whereas everything else in the middle is enduro racing, and you can train for it in lots of different ways, and most of that is just riding your bike, which I think for most people is something they've always wanted to be able to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me the main thing for like a lot of racing like in downhill for many years and everything is that basically enduro is social. There is a sharing of the ride that you still have the competition, and that's going to be the battle and the challenge of this discipline in the next few years, is to keep that, to keep the fact that you when you are in between the stage, Jay and I are chatting to know if everything is fine and everything going well, and towards the end of the day, what I think, and I think that's everyone thinking, is like, we all want to be down safe and have enjoyed the ride. When you look at now the overall marketing that's been around DH, and probably the same about cross country, even if I'm not fully into it, but everyone has become so individual about what's happening, about their performance, about their bike setting, about the track, about the lines, about everything. And I think the battle for enduro, because now there is so much interest from the industry, from the media, from everyone around, is to keep this atmosphere. Keep this atmosphere and keep this fair play, because that's how enduro is born. Enduro is born to share the ride. Share the ride, and as Jerome has just said, is to actually battle between each other with friends. And we had a moment, and Jerome would be able to talk about it because he was with me, but we had Jared Graves arriving at the top of one of the stage, and he had no tools on him. And we had a backpack, and he just come, well, in the terms of spirit of enduro, would you guys could lend me a tool? And seriously, I was on the side, there was like three or four of us that took up the bag to give the tool. And in a way, I look at this moment as an example of what he has to be and what he must be, because I think if we are capable to keep this mindset around the sport, we won't need media, we won't need industry, we just will need riders for the discipline to exist. And I think as long as we keep the riders' capacities in each of the races, these sports will go on and on and on forever, because as everyone said, that's what people do. So there is no need of media. Tomorrow you stop media in DH is gone, doesn't exist. Then enduro, you can take off everything around, the sport will work on its own because people just do it.
So it's sounding, it's very nice and very warm in what everyone's saying, and I completely agree, the spirit of Enduro, but we're certainly seeing challenges to it in certain aspects. There are challenges to organizers and Chris himself.
Yeah. But let's step straight into the pot. Like, it's pretty clear that today, because there is money involved, let's be direct, because there is money involved, it becomes complicated.
Not only money, also fame, media, attention.
Yeah, but fame is bringing money. That's the only thing.
People,
and for me, that's the philosophy that I got in life. Like, everything you have been seeing is that every time there is money somewhere, it makes the human values, is that a correct word, very challenging. Because then when it becomes for fame, for money, for podium, for results, it becomes complicated. And today, that's the problem the organizers are having. And Chris will be able to talk about it better than me.
Yeah, I think we are having I don't think we're having a problem.
No, problem.
I think we're having a
challenge.
Very interesting journey. Because it's the first time you guys have all been together racing each other in Enduro. You know, this is the first year that we look at the top 30 best mountain bike riders, in my opinion, in the world, and you guys have been racing each other head to head. So that's thrown up a huge amount of challenges. But I think that particularly upsets me when I look at the problems that we're having around course taping, for example, because yes, as organisers, we have a huge responsibility to make fair play and fair sport for you guys as racers. But then, you know, going back to the very start of this discussion, I think the riders, you guys at the top end and everyone else, has a huge responsibility to pass on the morals to the amateurs and to the young riders, as I've talked about before, but also to respect the environment and the nature in the area that they're in. And I think the whole course cutting and the kind of, often I think, selfish approach, that goes against the very spirit that we're talking about and that we've all talked about so far. So yeah, huge challenge for us to rein it all in and structure it in a way that keeps it warm and fuzzy and fun. But I think there's equally a big challenge for you guys to actually
keep that spirit going. That's simple. And we'll talk straight. I mean, if we talk, and Jill will give that point of view after I give mine, so he can answer that as well. I'm coming to a line into a corner, and I see that you have not a 10-second cut, because you know that's a cut and you don't take it, but you have a 2-second line inside of a tree. This line is completely marked. You can see that people are taking it, but the trail is going around. And this battle in your head is saying, well, is that a line? Are we taking that as a line or as a cut? That this difference is what we need to clearly specify. But it is complicated to specify. Are we going to be able to do it? That is something that is very challenging.
Yeah, but I think, Fabian, there's a, you know, I've been a racer and I'm a rider and I've worked in World Cup level competition. And I understand that when the red mist comes down and we're all competitive people, that you want to get to the bottom the fastest. But I've had to tape off sections of trail this year that have been, in my eyes, ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think there's a blatant disregard from some riders for the environment. You know, we're here and we've said how fantastic the single track around Whistler is. I've been blown away. And it upsets
and
me to think that we might leave. We might leave next week with a bunch of guys skidding in a straight line because it was faster.
Because it was faster.
When in reality, the switchback is pretty damn clear in my eyes. So I think I think that's a huge responsibility for the organisers to look after the trail, to make sure we don't leave a mess and not be welcomed back. But that's also you guys to actually temper that kind of competitive element in.
We also think we're going to be the ones that can create that for the future. You know, this is the first year, and if we're seen as role models in how we go about that we need to create a culture that if there's a trail, and it's damn obvious there is a single track trail, then you stick to it, you know. And also it's that mentality of not looking beyond that, and almost not, if you know that the trail, you just stick to it, and you don't even start looking for those cuts, and it's because that's almost where it comes from. I must ride around with blinkers on, because I'll hear people say, "You not see that cut there?" You not see it? And I'm just concentrating on the single track that I've seen. I don't see those things. So it's almost like that. It's re-educating yourself to just focus on what's there. And I think that's hard coming from downhill, particularly when you've got course tape.
Your
eyes are
always
open. The skill of downhill racing is finding that good line and getting a line that's better than your competitors. But I think when we're in places like we are now, when there's, you know, top of the world, for example, that is, you know, there's a very obvious line down the blooming, the most barren moonscape you could ever imagine. And if people can't see that that's the trail, then I find that, you know, amazing to imagine they're going to try and find cuts, but they will, and that's
When we rode it today, you had one, like you had two switchbacks. I stopped at the bottom. There was two tire mark of people going straight.
But that's the thing. It's this.
And that's that's what we need to stop.
It's an education point of view, and that is not acceptable, and it needs to be drummed into people. That
we had this discussion. When was it, Trans-Provence last year?
Wasn't it? We had two issues.
We had two issues with things like that. And at the end, Ash, the organizer, came up with a kind of a rule
that was
that it hard to complicate. Where he say, okay, 3 meters off the trail, that's a line. And more than that, it's a cut. It's cheating. When there is an apex on a switchback, if you can have a bunny up inside, 3 meters inside, that's a line. But if you go more than 3 meters, so you can't really go on the trail and walk the 3 meters and check if he was at 3.5 meters. But that's how you say it. It's building a mindset through people. So they are actually staying on the trail, and I mean, I'm completely going on the side of Chris. He's like, I have plenty of trails home in the south of France, beautiful switchback, and it's fucking straight down the road now, because people are cutting the switchback. But the trail is nice because you ride the switchback. If it's straight, it doesn't interest anymore.
Yeah, but you don't raise it straight, and people still cut.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like you go for just fun riding with your friends. You go at the local races. They still cut the switchback.
So how do we educate and change that mentality? I mean, you raised a good point. Just from mountain bikers in general, we're seeing this recreationally happen. But from a race point of view, how do we do it? Do courses have to be hard tape, or do we name and shame people in a public gallery after the event if they're caught cheating?
You know, we could start like with the simple facts. And here, for example, we've got a 51, I think, kilometer loop. 19, I think it's right, kilometers of racing. It is near on impossible to tape both sides.
Kilometers. It should not
that
be like this.
Huge amount of course tape. And I think, you know, we started the year light on course tape, and because I said, you know, the level, you guys are all racing each other, the level's been raised. There's more and more importance, fame, money, you know, all the stuff we talked about. People are cutting more and more corners, so we've added more and more tape per round. But I think we're at a limit now, you know, in taping the stuff I did this morning, where really, I think that's the limit I want to see the tape at, you know. And I think from now on, it needs to be peer pressure. And even from my days in the UCI, rules can only go so far, and good rules are excellent at creating the structure. But it's the buy-in from the riders and the peer pressure and the culture that's then developed that really makes things stick and gives it traction. And that's where I think, you know, the guys, all of us around the table here, and you know who you then speak to, and you, Jerome, you talked to the 14-year-olds entering your event. That's what has to be passed on, is it? That's the trail, and maybe there's no tape, but you ride the trail. Because the mark you leave, it's not a piece, the snow doesn't melt and come back fresh next year. You know, that mark can stay there for 10, 20, 30, 100 years. And that's important that we educate that. So I'd say, yes tape, yes rules, but I think it has to be peer pressure. We saw it in skin suits in downhill, right? Skin suit rule wasn't around for years, but there was a, Tracy and Fabian, I mean, you guys were kind of involved in it.
Mm.
There was a peer pressure element there that, even though there was no rule for years, people generally didn't wear skin suits because they didn't want to be ousted in the media or whatever it was.
Yeah, but do you think that was a good way to do it?
I think for the course taping, and I think
for the skin suit story.
I don't necessarily agree that skin suits should have been banned because it was, for me, downhill is the kind of pure performance element, but I understand the marketing angle.
But I think if
we look at it as an example on the power of peer pressure, not on the skin suit rule in specific.
No, but on the
that's a good example, good analogy, I think, for all you guys to look at.
Because you see guys, I mean, during the training, you see guys and you see people just looking for lines.
Yeah.
And that's for sure that if you could actually manage to say, hey guys, that's a line, that's a cut. Make the difference in between both, and that's something that as you say, the pressure could really help.
And also, I think that comes into, you know, the whole issue of practice, and we've had, you know, varying amounts of practice over the year of the Enduro World Series. And for me, the more time you give people chance to know where they're going to ride and then scope it out, the more time they're going to dwell on it, stand there, look at it, you know, the almost the way that the French guys did Val d'Alos, and you literally, you couldn't look at it, you had one roll, you could walk it, but there's no way you can walk 50k loop or a mountainside.
Yeah.
If you literally have one roll down, you can't stop, you have to keep moving. Okay, some people will still find stuff if they're good looking ahead and they've got that mentality, but generally they're not going to have time to dwell upon it and kind of, you know, premeditate cheating, basically. You know, you've got to ride the trail.
And,
so for me, that the practice may be some way of
being a solution. I agree with Tracy, and I'm not going to play on my side because I'm a much better rider when I know the trail than I don't know, compared to Jérôme, that is a real enduro racer, obviously. I know better. I ride better when I know my line, but I think enduro has no training. And for sure, it gives an advantage to certain people that are local, that know the trails. But if you look at really the trails, when they announced the trail yesterday evening for Whistler, okay, everyone was guessing, what is it, Kuiper, and then pretty much top of the world down here. But all the other, no one was really guessing where they would be. And you would have given those Saturday evening, everyone would be like, okay,
yeah,
that's why we're racing.
I completely agree. I would love to see that.
And the thing is, it's like, you can't do that everywhere. You can't do that everywhere for a simple reason, because if you go in Val d'Alos and you don't give training to the others like he has been, the people has been racing years before, they kind of know it. If you go in Colorado, where you're riding most of the bike parks, everyone knows the trails because that was only in the bike parks. So it's, I love this diversity of rules that we got from one event to the other, because I think that's, again, the best rider in the world, that's the one that will need to adapt to every type of rules and combination and everything. But I think that we should try to avoid as much training as we can in the case it's possible. Because that's when enduro is about.
I think somewhere like here in Whistler, we could have ridden these, you know, if we could have even escaped the bike park, then even with the bike park stage, I still think the whole thing could have been ridden blind without it being a safety issue, because you ride differently.
But then the trail needs to be properly marked, like you need to see it where you're going.
Yeah.
Oh, just for the connections.
Yeah, for connections, definitely.
But generally, when you're on a single track and it's a single track and we're all going to learn to stick to a single track, then you don't need to tape the thing. You know, that's the thing, it's junctions between trails, definitely, some of that marking. But most of us have raced Trans-Provence. When you're looking for tiny little arrows, you know, we've managed to race that, okay, you get a little bit wrong. Exactly, because you're navigating, you're looking up.
Yeah.
It's a skill in itself,
yeah,
is to find the way down the trail. So for me, if we can eliminate practice for places where it is safe and it's possible, we'd have, I think, the best racing and potentially the most fair racing as well, and the least impact to the environment, because people aren't hammering the trails knowing that that's one they're going to race.
But that's not doable everywhere.
It's not everywhere.
Like in Puntala, you know that there is 8 trail and like you're going to ride them, so you can come a week earlier and like train. And
train.
If you are not allowed to ride a week before, it's a bit, like,
yeah,
for people that come from far, they cannot come 1 month earlier and then go back home and for the race. So we should adapt, I think, to the races. And for the taping system, I think it's 50-50, so 50% is the rider, like they should be educated, stay on the trail, like you see the trail, you stay on it, and also there is also a way to tape the course, not with like kilometer of tape, but just like main points, making gates, or just like 2 meter before the turn, just a small tape. So if people go in front of the tape, this is a proper cheating. If you go around, this is the line. Like,
but
I think even just like a flagging.
You put like a piece of tape hanging, and the guy, if you go 3 meters away from that tape, if you pass further than 3 meters on both sides away from that tape, you out of the trail.
I don't think 3 meters is good, because then people say, I thought I was okay. Like just a piece of tape, you have to go around. That's it. And I just put like, you can have like 1 kilometer straight line, no tape. But like when you arrive at the turn, like, one on the inside, one on the outside, and
that's,
you go around, and that's it.
Can I
and like each turn, so when you ride, you can see first, so that less training is easy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you go before the tape, it's proper cheating. You cannot say, oh, I saw that, we just want to open the turn and make it smoother. It is different. So just like 50-50, race organization, like a code, like, okay, there is tape, you have to go in between. And like the rider, you have to stick on the trail. And when there is 2 tape, you go in between.
Which is what we had just now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've seen through experience, that's not always working.
But then you should like name the guy disqualified and like no.
But there has been time penalties this year.
Yeah, but even worse, like name, and so this is you're not the spirit, you go away.
So I'd like to know, like, how would you police this, and what should the appropriate penalty be for? Like,
exactly,
that's open to the table to everybody.
You would need to have people everywhere. Mm-hmm. You would need to, I mean, it's kind of complicated because it's a long thing. I mean, first of all, there is, in all that story, there was one thing I want to say, is that those guys, Chris and everyone around them, the organizer, are doing a great job, because that's not an easy task. That's something completely new, where we can see that there is a lot of debate, a lot of point of view, a lot of description of the sport, and that's not easy, because everyone is thinking their own way to enduro, everyone is thinking about his own rules, about his own way to appear, about the mentality of the riders, so that's not easy, and those guys are putting a lot of effort to make it happen, and that's mainly because of them that we are here, so we got to be very thankful towards that. But then when it comes down to finding a proper rule for that story, we're talking about cutting the trails, but we're talking about the product that has got to stay on the bike for the full weekend or for the full racing. We're talking about main key rules that needs to be well driven. Because we are on a very large surface every time, because the trails are long, it is complicated. It's not downhill, it's not four cross, it's not cross country. It's everything is long, everything is far away, everything is on a large distance, and you can't post people everywhere.
No, but I don't think riders are cheaters. They just use the rules. So if
that's exactly it. You're right.
Make it simple, and if you're out of the rule, like, it's a proper disqualification or like a proper sanction, not just okay, like, excuse. That's the rule, it's written. The simple, you stay on the trail, you have tape, you go in between. You're outside, like, 2 meter. You're 2 meter.
Yeah, but Jay,
your rule is great.
If you open training for 2 days like there is there, the inside line of the corner will become more of the trail than the actual trail. Yeah, so when it comes to the moment of the race, when you have people that are taking that line, what do you think it should be? We had this discussion. Let me just finish 1 sec. We had this discussion in the prologue in La Garda. We arrive in La Garda in the third corner, first enduro race of the season. There is like main line around. I had a bad number. I go the main line around. The last 20 riders, because one started to take on the inside of the bump, one person did it, everyone behind did it. And there was like a 2 second cut on a minute and a half prologue. We don't care. Didn't change much for the racing. But that's just to show the fact, first race, that you have on the prologue course handmade, people that are railing the bump or the way back of the loop instead of taking the thing because there was no tape. You had the pile of sand where you're supposed to go around the tape at the bottom of the pile of sand. Few people without giving name are taking inside the pile of sand because the tape was at the bottom of the pile of sand.
I think that's why I say 50-50.
So
50 the rider,
yeah.
50 so, just a piece of tape and yeah. No problem.
But it's,
you know?
Also the rider has to take responsibility as well. But I also think in order sometimes to create that culture, maybe having being penalised in order to for people to realise that it is being taken seriously and, you know, cutting the course isn't acceptable. Actually, to see someone that is properly disqualified or even whatever, you know, it almost needs...
You need to set an
needs
example
something
to somebody.
To start it off, and then it becomes a culture, I think. It's often going to be hard because who's going to be the first person that, you know, if some, like you said, someone does it, everyone else is competitive, they're going to want to do it. But if they know that that person is going to have, you know, be DQ'd from the race, they'll then think, actually, next time I see someone do it, I'm not going to do it. And then that slowly rolls on and it becomes then, you know, a learnt behaviour that isn't acceptable.
But, I'm sure that time will come. I mean, Fabian, you'll know we had some issues in Val d'Alos. And yeah, we haven't as yet had a very blatant course cut that's been caught, you know, a premeditated, I would say, course cut that's been caught. And everyone has to be aware that we're not downhill, we're not cross country, we don't have 50, 60 marshals in eyesight of each other because we're in the wilderness. The whole point of this sport is we're experiencing the wilderness and the trails outside of the bike park like we are here. Now that brings logistical problems in people, you know, course taping, access, just seeing where people are, you know, you can't have one person following and shadowing every racer. It's just impossible. So I'm sure that time will come. We're only four and a half rounds in, I would say. We've not had it yet, but I'm sure we will. And I think, you know, the rules change depending on the different countries. It's been a big challenge to try and marry the
the federation rules in Italy, the federation rules in France, and then over here where we're purely on Enduro World Series rules now because there's no federation, like we were in Colorado, like we probably will be in the UK or anywhere else where we may go, because there's no federation rules there. So it's easy to say, you know, we'll pull it together, we'll disqualify someone, great, but first we'd have no clear evidence yet of any premeditated stuff, and we've had different enduro races in different territories under different rules that have been established for up to a decade. You know, we are in the infancy, so you've got to consider all those factors. That's all. It's not as easy from, you know, as it may seem from the outset.
And I think as Fabien said about the federation, the French federation, we talk a lot about the bad, but not enough about the good.
Yeah.
And like the four round we already had were pretty amazing, and like most of the things were like nice without any doubt. Like,
yeah.
So
it's many years of racing, and in France it starts to be fairly clear. It does start to be fairly clear, and I think the fact that organizer and location are so different every time, that's what makes it complicated to make it like an Enduro World Series, and that's why you guys are putting so much effort to make it happen. And I mean, so far, I mean, if you really look at it, it has been some debate, and it has been a lot of discussion because there is interest from everyone. But if you look at the first four races, what real problem we have?
And if you speak to the people,
yeah,
they all enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like,
there is no big problem.
It was awesome, and I want to come back. And that's the main thing. Like, you go to a race, you have a good time. Like, some of us think about the ranking, but most of the people, they come to have a fun weekend.
Yeah,
and
great,
like,
time. Because
we have a story to tell for all winter.
Yeah.
And like, I think,
yeah,
you guys, like the organization, like made a great job to offer this to all the people.
Yeah.
And I guess this weekend is going to be awesome.
Well, probably one of the best seeing the trails.
It's going to be the hardest.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
I'm looking forward to this one because it's the first time, in my opinion, enduro, you know, you're like we did in the Chilcotins on Monday. We got dropped off by a float plane. We're not going to get that on Sunday. You're not going to be that lucky.
You're not planning that.
Sorry,
yeah, I'm away.
winner does. No, I'm going to get a float plane and you guys can ride. And yeah, I think, you know, we got dropped off in the middle of nowhere. And we had, like, the first thing that we said, the plane flew away, and we were like, wow, well, I hope we don't snap rear mech off in the first 10 metres, because we're on our own. And you guys are going to be on your own. When you get on that gondola Sunday morning, you got the first four stages, you're going to have to manage that, and I'm really excited by that, because it's the first time I think that this whole series actually replicates the feeling that you get when you're on a bike,
yeah,
on the mountain,
no
with your friends, or on
no
your
mechanic.
Own. Yeah.
If you,
yeah,
break something, you have to fix it by yourself.
Absolutely. I hope you've all got loads of zip ties and duct tape,
yeah,
and everything in your packs.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I think this year there's been a definite change in the mentality of some of the competitors. Like, some people are doing the series because they love to race, not necessarily because they love to just ride their bikes, because there's a title and a ranking and fame and fortune and everything that's going along with it now. You know, you definitely.
I'm a rich bitch.
You know, you definitely see the people out there that you know they're just there for racing and to get points, and you'll never see them carrying a hydration pack with a first aid kit or a splint in there, because that's not how they work. You know, that's not what they're about. They're there to race. So I think this will be a great race, because if something does happen, you know, those people won't know what the hell to do, because that's not what they do on weekends. They don't know how to, I'm not saying they, I'm just saying there are people out there that they're not used to doing sort of backcountry rides or adventure rides. They're racers. Like, they'll race whatever, you know, whether it's mountain bikes or go-karts or motorbikes. That's their mentality, where there is a side to it that is more about the adventure and people being prepared out there and maybe helping, you know, helping someone else that's broken something, because they have a derailleur in their pack or cable or whatever it may be, or extra food. Or so that'll be good to see this race.
I think that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed coming from downhill to enduro as well, that there's so much more to it than just being the fastest person, you know, on each stage. There's
strategy.
There's, yeah, you have to think, you have to engage brain, you have to, there's a compromise always with equipment. Do you go for fast rolling tyres, but they may puncture? Do you go for something that's not going to, you know, it's going to be really heavy duty, then you've got to carry up the climb. So there's so many things you have to consider. You know, you want to be the fastest you possibly can, but if you take a straight line, you know, it could be a risky puncture line, because it's, there's, you know, there's so much going on. And for me, that's made it really, really exciting, that it's, there's just, it's such a huge...
That's a big learning for us.
Oh,
as,
for sure.
As a DH racer, I mean, I've seen that I push, I mean, I have a way too much commitment for enduro, and I go way too close of the tree, and I tie my lines away too much compared to the other lengths that we have to ride. And I mean, Jerome is well used to it, and Nico as well, with the experience they have for enduro racing. But yeah, finding the right compromise for enduro is definitely something.
And like
that
the pace
is
of the day as well, you know, we've got a 20 plus minute stage at the end of a 4 or 5 hour day ahead of us on Sunday. But that's going to be, you know, there's no way you can physically race that like you would a downhill race. It's just not physically possible. So, you know, learning how to pace your efforts, when you're going to recover, when you're going to go hard, all those things, it, for me, it's just, it's been awesome, because it's completely given me a new kind of lease of life for my racing, but more for my riding, you know, having that chance to...
I was with one of the young French riders this afternoon, and he was looking at all lines for the berms to open them up and ride well. And I was like, but dude, you're going to have already 15 minutes of racing in the legs.
So
your heartbeat will be at 200. I mean, what the hell are you going to pick up the line at 10 centimeters to the other? You're just going to ride the trail. That's the only thing you're going to do.
You can see like two like world champions picking. And I think this is what people like come to enduro, like to have experience. Like they're going to finish the race, and like they will be able to talk about the race for weeks, for years.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this year Whistler, I did the race and I crashed in this tree and I smashed my derailleur and I didn't have water, and then, and I had this guy. This is what makes enduro so popular, I think. And this is the success, not about if there is fame or money. Like the success is the base, like all the people that come to the race to share and like to have the experience
for each other.
I think it's a great resume of what we see.
It's a collective experience.
Okay, well, I think we should wrap up this round of things.
I don't think we scratched the surface of what we could scratch here.
Oh, my goodness. These are a lot of right chatterboxes, aren't they?
You guys didn't even talk. You just sat.
That's quite pleasant. I'm sure it was for the readers. Viewers, goodness gracious.
The listeners,
the video.
Should we open it up to the truth or dare? Let's do a few questions from there.
Let's do a couple quick ones.
We're already too late.
So truth or dare is a section we opened up, and we asked all of our
my question we went through it.
We asked all of our guests to
read it for so long, you know, I gotta chat too much.
We asked all of our guests to write down a question completely and honestly on a blank sheet of paper, which Tristan's now pulling out of the hat, and he will read them out.
Green pen.
All right. First question, energy drinks, do they have a place in enduro?
My point of view,
to anyone?
Is that to anyone or is it to one person?
I think this is for everybody.
Hell yeah. It's a big day out. So
Okay. Let's define
what's an energy drink.
Because we may don't talk about the same thing.
I mean, we don't care about the product, especially. Like, it's like they support the sport, they support the rider, they want it to grow. So
story.
It's not only about the money, it's about the media, about make like for the organization. They can help, they can support, they can bring something. Like,
no, I agree. Yeah. Where the sport would be, many of the extreme sports would be struggling without the world of energy drinks, when we talk Rockstar, Monster, Red Bull, all those kind of things. For me, that question directly straight away went to nutrition, and those are probably drinks I wouldn't be using on my 5-6 hour day of a ride. So I think the sport specific nutritional drinks, I think, are of massive importance, as they are in cross country.
I thought
for
it
enduro.
Was just beer. That's where you're going wrong. Damn it,
need some water.
Okay, so our next question, this one's actually directed right towards Chris. Last year you took a big decision, leaving the UCI and starting the Enduro World Series. A few months later, would you do this the same way? And what would you change or make different?
Well, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I mean, I don't know. What would I do the same thing again? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it said. Like
what you said.
I didn't even write anything down here.
Yeah, I think it's been an amazing. It's been an amazing experience. It's been an amazing journey. It feels like it's very much still at the start. I certainly don't miss the UCI, and I don't miss that environment. I love the environment we're in. I love the fact we're sitting around having these open discussions with people that I think are very like-minded, both to each other and to myself. But I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't change anything. No,
maybe not the pull-out couch. Maybe you'll.
Oh there. Yeah. I'm in a nice hotel tonight though. Yeah. No, it's been really good. It's been really, really good. It's been great just being a part of the whole thing.
Cool. Jerome, you've raced enduro for longer than anybody else. What has changed most this year?
We have seen more and more trainer in the pits, like people that pedal. Before it was not really allowed, but this year as the World Series started, like it started to be more and more. Like home trainer. Like
warming up.
Really? Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be much time for that on Sunday.
Yeah, not on Sunday, but that's the main thing.
55K is going to wear you out, I don't know what it is.
Like a few years ago with Remy and other guys, we were like on the start of a maxi avalanche, and we said like, when it will be how do you call it?
Like warm-up trainer.
Warm-up, where you have to warm up before
warm
the race. Warm-up
trainer, like when this will happen at the start of the event, we will retire and do something else. that's okay, it's still in the pits, it's not at the top of the stages, so it's okay. But like
turbo trainer at the start of each stage, five stages.
Yes.
But again, does it go back to peer pressure?
Sorry?
Does it go back to peer pressure and what you say to each other? If you see someone up there carrying a turbo trainer,
you cannot have assistance, so you need to carry it down the hill after. So that's the problem.
Put it in the back.
I don't think anyone would take that risk anymore because, I mean, everyone has been warming up on their own. Most of the time you can pedal up or pedal at the start, and we all do that. But I think Jerome is a very good example, is that he showed the overall atmosphere. If one day we have home trainer at the start, it's the end of this enduro spirit that we are talking about. That's because pure racing and nothing else. And he's fully right with that.
All right, and one last question here. Jerome, do you ever get bummed out about anything? when you make mistakes, do you get upset? You seem so happy-go-lucky. Do you ever get stressed out? Ever?
You look stressed. Hard to say. When I do shit, I get upset for sure. But no, when I'm racing and like something bad happens, it's just the life. There is other races and other things that works pretty good in my life, so I just like put it on the side and think about something else.
So when we were in Trans-Provence and we'd just gone through the day two storm from hell, and you'd been crossing through like raging rivers, then you got a puncture on that stage which you had to fix in like hypothermic temperatures, and then your trousers fell off. And your penis fell out of your leg.
Come down to a point.
How did that make you feel?
I mean, it's only a race, and it's more like Trans-Provence especially is more an adventure, something you live. And I mean, I already wanted to do it the year before, so it doesn't change anything. No. More seriously, I mean, it's a race, and like just after that, I just wanted to win, like total stage domination. And I like find a new objective and a new goal, and like try to reach this goal.
What a chance!
I mean, at first I was more like occupied with all my penis was like if it was still in one piece then about the race and the time I lost.
What was more important, the time you lost or the end of your penis?
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of the question, so I think let's wrap this up. Seb, again, thanks for putting this all together. Obviously Tracy, Anka, Jerome, Chris, Vivian, thanks for joining us here at the Off Track Show. And I've already made you guys late for your dinner reservation, so again, I guess Well, this will be up in shorter on the internet, and some exciting racing and practice to come through the next few days. So,
if there's any listeners out there as well, next week we'll be doing something similar with some downhillers. Should we do slope stylers, or are they able to hold a conversation?
you have to do it that early afternoon.
Yeah.
Not too early.
I think it'll sound like a podium speech from a supercross. I'd like to thank my sponsors, blah, 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 blah. That would be the end of the interview. So.
I would like to grunt, grunt, thank yeah. you, yawn.
Instagram, like,
but if there's any viewers out there that are still listening to this, I keep saying viewers, goodness gracious. If there are listeners out there, then send us questions and suggestions for yeah. guests in the future.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be doing our wrap-up show next week, so stay connected on Twitter and, of course, Instagram at @off_track or on Twitter, @off_track_MTB. From myself and Seb, thanks very much for tuning in, guys, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks, guys.